Hello, friends, and welcome to episode 85 of the CU Insight Experience. This episode is brought to you by our friends at PSCU. As the nation's premier payments CUSO, PSCU proudly supports the success of more than 1,500 credit unions. My name is Randy Smith. I'm one of the co-founders of CUinsight.com, and it is my job on the show to have conversations with the best and the brightest of the credit union community. I get to pick their brains and see if we can't find a few nuggets that we can all learn from. My guest on today's show is Joanne Todd. Joanne is the president and CEO of Northeast Family Federal Credit Union up here in Connecticut. Joanne's someone that I've known for a while, from DE events to things around Connecticut, and she was actually on the trip that I took to Kenya last summer, my first experience traveling there. So I knew Joanne and I would have an amazing conversation. Joanne talked about the importance of development work and how it benefits her credit union and the community they serve. She also talked about what small credit unions need to do to survive and thrive, and how she got her start in credit unions at a very young age. She is up there with a few of other former guests who got into credit unions very early on. As always, we had some fun with the rapid fire questions to wrap up the show. I knew this was going to be a great conversation. Joanne has a passion for credit unions and the community and development work that really is second to none. I think you're really going to be inspired by her, and I greatly appreciated her sharing her story and those lessons learned with all of us. So, without further ado, I give you my conversation with Joanne Todd. Enjoy. Joanne, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Randy. It's really good to be with you.
Oh, I've been looking forward to this. Over the past few years, we've gotten to know each other and actually share some experiences. Last summer, we were in Kenya together, back when we could leave the country. So now you join Lois and George and Jim and Mary Beth, who are all on that trip. There's always so many questions that I have from people that do, you know, the global work as well as the work in their communities. And that's where I really wanted to start with you is, like, what benefits do you get to bring back to your community and your credit union from the work that you do globally with credit unions as well?
Well, the benefits to our relatively small credit union are kind of interesting. In fact, people often ask me, so you do credit union work around the world, and yet you're in a smallish credit union in the local community. But, you know, I think I learned through that the essence of what our social mission is really about. I can remember the first time I had an experience with another credit union movement, and that's when the Connecticut League started their partnership with Trinidad and Tobago, went to their annual meeting, and wow, talk about member engagement. Those folks are vocal. They care very much about what's going on. And it just showed me what a true cooperative can be. And following that trip, I actually went to Uzbekistan to do some credit union development work. And our mission was to train small communities about what credit unions were. Because the farmer-to-farmer program was considering starting credit unions because they saw that their farmers needed a place to do their financial transactions. Now, let's remember, Uzbekistan's a former Soviet republic.
Right. Yeah.
So, they did not have a banking industry. They didn't speak English at all, so we had a communication barrier. By not having a banking industry, they didn't know anything about financial institutions.
Yeah.
As a former Soviet republic, they really didn't have any experience with democracy. Culturally, there was a huge difference. And here we were trying to teach about credit unions. And, you know, a lot of people say, well, you learn so much when you have to teach a subject. Let me tell you, that preparing for those training sessions was a whole education. And then there was the education of, wow, how fortunate and privileged we are to live in a country that allows us to have a democracy, and where we get to exercise our vote, not just in a democracy, but at our credit union. You know, yeah. It's kind of the credit union cooperative principles and the importance of that in action. Uzbeks typically didn't trust each other as a former Soviet republic. So this whole business of a field of membership where people get together and trust each other, that was challenging. I mean, it's just one challenge after another. And it brought home to me how special credit unions are.
It's interesting you say that about trust. That was one of the big things as I was getting to know George at Akasca last year, that like he was talking about across that continent is getting people to trust financial systems. You know, I mean, because there has been so much, you know, I mean, just there's been mass inflation and all kinds of other things that, you know, just the idea of getting people to trust, it was something that maybe we take for granted here in the United States. It was very eye-opening to me. I would be remiss if I didn't give a shout out to an amazing organization that I know you're a part of. You were, when we were in Kenya, you were actually pulling double duty. You were with all of us DEs, but you also are part of the American Friends of Kenya. Could you tell people about that as well? Because it was amazing, and you had me carry a huge bag on the way over there when I was heading there, so full of supplies and books and all kinds of good stuff. So,
yes, in development work, every opportunity to bring things to the developing country and to leave everything behind that you have is really important. Asante sana for the shout out to American Friends of Kenya. And asante sana, of course, is thank you in Swahili. So American Friends of Kenya are partners with Kenyans in bringing a better future. So what does that mean? Well, it means that we have a network across the whole Kenyan country in some of the poorest communities of libraries and educators and healthcare facilities and even Little Leagues. I mean, we actually were very instrumental in bringing Little League baseball to Kenya.
Oh, that's fantastic.
But I want to focus on the libraries because the project you were involved in and what you brought over was bags and bags of books. So let me go back to the start of American Friends of Kenya. I was on a trip in 2004 with a school to Kenya, somewhat of an exchange trip. When we got back, we saw the need was so great that all of the adults on that trip pitched in and started a 501c3. So I've been with American Friends of Kenya since the ground floor. As with anything good, you can't do it without other folks, without partners. And so the group that we have here in the United States, which is completely uncompensated, has been amazing. And I'm proud to be part of that group. But more amazing are the folks in Kenya. I mean, we have people who live in amazing poverty and yet see the need to educate. Yeah. And that education is really the most powerful thing behind change, right?
Absolutely.
And helping folks get educated, whether it's sending, you know, we've sent over 500,000 books to Kenya. We've sent thousands of assisted devices, meaning crutches and wheelchairs, because folks with disabilities in most developing countries don't really have access to that sort of thing. We've been instrumental in creating 60 new community libraries since we started. And Don Bosco actually, you know, counted as the 17th. We've helped sending shelving. So every year we send a 40-foot container to Kenya that is distributed across all those networks. And we also have a trip, sadly. This year, yep, we couldn't go because of the pandemic. In fact, I would have just been returning from Kenya today or yesterday had we gone. And so the group who goes there is kind of blitzes the place by going into libraries or schools and setting up libraries, showing programs. I got to say, one of the most rewarding things I've been involved in was a book discussion group in Mombasa, Kenya, a highly Muslim population. These were teenagers. We read The Eye, the Ear, and the Arm, which is an Afro-futuristic novel. And the level of conversation and intellect of those teens, men and women talking to each other, different folks from different tribes, communicating and talking through ideas in a respectful way. How can that not be the foundation for a better, brighter future?
Absolutely.
So, as you can tell, this sort of work gets me jazzed up.
Absolutely. I get it. It's so interesting. One of the things that I keep thinking of, even just from my travels, and when you were talking about education and learning as being that big change agent, when Jill and I were in Vietnam, going through some of the museums and things like that, it was interesting how many of the heroes, I'll just say, using quotes, like from their different like revolutions, were educators first, right? Like they were the people that started the papers and people that started the, you know, putting out, but it was that education seemed to be that common bond that, like, you know, really drove people forward. So it's I'm a believer. I'd like to move back to today a little bit and this global pandemic experience. How do you feel it will change the way that members interact with your credit union and credit unions overall, or do you feel it will change the way they will?
I think somewhat it may change the way they do transactions, because certainly more people have adopted online, doing online transactions, have downloaded our app. Hundreds of our members have downloaded our app. But to me, that's not as critically important as the things it's not going to change, which is really the connection with the members.
Absolutely.
Right? How members feel about the credit union? Well, I hope they feel pretty good about us being there for them. Our mission and what we strive to do is to create community. And that isn't about doing the transaction. Certainly we, doing the processing transactions, being a financial institution, doing all those things well are table stakes. But really how members feel about transacting business with us compared to how they feel about transacting it with our competitors, particularly with banks who aren't as locally plugged in as we are, I think is really the important outcome that we're looking for here.
It's interesting that you say that. I was having a conversation earlier this morning with someone and they were talking about the digital adoption of their membership, but how important that's making for if like those touch points go down, right? So like mm-hmm. each one that you have to connect with the members, whether it's over the phone or in person, is so much more important because you may not have as many. Right? Like to make that connection if they're doing more digitally. And I thought that was a interesting point he was making about going forward and, thinking about that. And that sounds like the same thing you're saying is the digital is important. It's table stakes though, right? So, I mean, it's how we connect is, yeah, that's beautiful. Wow. Let me ask this question. It's an interesting one for me. And you and I have been a part of some Zoom calls and talked about some different things, over the past few months. And it's also not only just from the member standpoint, but from your team standpoint as well. Like, how do you see it changing the way you work with your colleagues or anything there? As we're seeing more remote work, I know it's different amongst each credit union, really.
Well, I think that for us, and for everybody, it's allowed us much more flexibility. I mean, certainly as a small credit union before this, we did not have folks working remotely. We did not encourage that at all. We very much wanted to have the team, the community, the human touch with our members as they came in to visit the credit union. And we're a small credit union, so that's, I think, very appropriate for us. We had to stand up a remote work environment overnight. I mean, the changes involved were just monumental, particularly for a small organization that didn't have a lot of resources. So, how is it going to look going forward? So I think that gives us some flexibility there. But I think we're still going to want to be there on the human touch side for our members. And they've told us as much. They can't wait to get back in here. As far as the work is concerned, I do think it pointed up the value of generalists in our organization. And, being small, most of us wear multiple hats. But because we're trying to have a resilient organization where we have a team, teams that are completely separated from each other, just so there's no cross virus transmission, and an additional remote team, the ability of those folks to do a lot of different things has become critically important. And it's very valuable to the organization, even when we don't have this set up.
Absolutely. I've always thought that as a small business owner, I've always thought small credit unions were just like us as a small business. We all wear many different hats, right? Like, so, and you have to in smaller organizations. You're speaking my language there. I was excited to ask you this question. It's one that I've asked throughout the entire podcast, really, but is there something that you think credit unions need to do, and maybe specifically small credit unions, to stay relevant with all the disruption that has been going on in financial services? There's even more now. But the reason that I was so excited to ask you this was, like, I know how much your credit union's connected to your community. So, like, is part of that change, like, staying focused, just like the work that, you know, you've done overseas and things of that, like, being part of the community, is that going to keep us relevant? Or
yes, I'm doubling down on that. I absolutely am. I'm going to go back to the fact that, yes, we have to be able to do the financial transactions well. We have to have digital. We have to have some level of convenience. Our pricing has to be okay. But if we live by pricing, we die by pricing. If we live by digital, we die by digital. Where we really differentiate ourselves, where we show ourselves as the financial institutions with a soul, is our connection to community. So I think, I'm not sure that I would say we have to do it differently, but I think we might even have to get deeper. You know, I'm a little concerned about what the next 6-8 months brings, assuming that, you know, we have a vaccine and we really get past this, truly get past this in a meaningful way. That intervening time is really going to test our mettle, test the mettle of our communities, and our members are going to need us. And fortunately, I feel like I've come up for air after the initial few months of just trying to keep the ship going,
right?
And we're going to be able to do some outreach. We have done some outreach to community, but we'll be able to get deeper in doing that, is my hope. And that's where I think small credit unions can succeed.
Absolutely. Last question in this section, but it ties right into what you just said. If we're to sit down a year from now, I know the crystal ball is a very foggy thing at this point for all of us, but what are you most proud of that you and your team at Northeast Family have accomplished over the next year?
So we started as a teachers credit union back in the 30s, as many credit unions did, back when financial institutions didn't serve teachers. So recently we've been saying, you know, what would keep us relevant going forward? And it really is turning towards communities that need us, just like the teachers did back in the 30s. I mean, frankly, we love our teacher members, but they don't need us anymore, nor is our relationship anything like it was back when a teacher came to a town, their principal told them to join the credit union, they stayed in that town, they stayed with that relationship forever. That whole dynamic has changed. So where am I going with this, as to your question? You know, I think in a year, we're going to see our outreach to the underserved community become deeper. Just while this pandemic has been going on, we received our Juntos Avanzamos designation. We serve a community that is largely Hispanic. We have about a quarter of our workforce is from that community. And so I hope we're going to look back on that and say, yes, we made a difference there where people really needed us.
Beautiful. Onto the second part of the show, the leadership section. What inspired you to take the gig as president and CEO of Northeast Family FCU?
I was asked to do it.
good enough inspiration right there.
So, yeah, I mean, that doesn't sound very inspiring, but I got to tell you, and this will go back away. So I grew up in an old mill town in Willimantic, Connecticut. And I was a high school intern. And so I worked in the finance division. I was a bit of a nerdy numbers person. And, you know, all the bigwigs of American Thread Company were in the finance division. I mean, it was, you know, these were the big fish in the small pond. Yeah. But they saw in me someone who could do numbers. So they sent me down to the credit union to help out because most of them were on the board, right? So when I was 16 years old, they stuck me in a room with a pile of files and said, Joanne, call these people and tell them they need to make payments on their loans. So I did just as I was told. But what that eventually happened is, when I was still a teenager, I was just about to turn 19. They made me manager of that credit union.
That's amazing.
I couldn't sleep at night. I was thinking, they put a teenager in charge of a financial institution. What are they thinking? But What an education. And something, you know, you talk about people falling into the credit union.
Absolutely.
That was my stumbling into the credit union. I was working there to get money to pay tuition to go to the University of Connecticut because I was accepted into the School of Engineering. So, you know, I'd have to say when you talk about inspiration, I can't say I had a specific inspiration for this gig.
Yeah.
But I go back to that, which is the reason I was offered a teller's job here at this credit union where I am now when I was going to engineering school.
Okay.
And over the years, I've promoted and different changes happened in my life. And I realized this is a good home for me. I mean, it's the perfect match of this nerdy accountant side and my desire to build community. So long answer to
that's fantastic. I did not realize it is interesting, like talking to people on the show, that how many people, for as many people that stumbled into credit unions, many people also had an experience early on in life that kind of brought them to credit unions in one way or another, or if it was family members. And that's so fantastic. So 16 and an intern. That's beautiful. As a leader, is there something that your team has heard you say so many times they can finish your sentence?
I asked them. And maybe they were afraid to tell me. I don't know. I mean, I would like to think that it's something along the lines of, you know, it's about the member. But I frankly don't know. Okay, maybe, you know, you better balance your draw. No, I don't think it's that.
I was going to say, you're better that than most of us at keeping it fresh, obviously. So, you know, sometimes as a leader, and I know this is something we've talked about with a lot of friends over the past few months, is you have to make that difficult decision. Is that something that you always had the ability to do, or is that something that you've had to kind of grow into or cultivate in yourself to make those tough decisions?
Well, I'm not sure I've grown into it because it's still not easy. It really isn't easy. Just about every difficult decision you make has a human element to it. And that's what makes it so, so hard. I mean, it is easy for me to look at the numbers. I can make the numbers work. No problem. But you got to look at the people behind the numbers. And that's where those difficult decisions come from. But I'll tell you, I get inspiration from a lot of my international work. Working in developing countries shows you what making hard decisions really means. I have a picture in my office. I face it, so a lot of people don't even see it. It is of a radiant bunch of women in Haiti. I went to Haiti and worked with a women's group. These ladies have absolutely nothing, yet they wanted to form something a little bit more than the saving circle and lending circle that they had. They wanted to have some funds from that fund microenterprise, and then the proceeds help orphans in their community. I mean, these women have nothing, and yet they're thinking of these kids that need an education, that need a place to stay. You know, if I have a tough decision, I look at that photo. I'm like, these women, they've got it. I have not seen tough decisions like they see. And I can do this. And so I find that very inspiring. And I can turn again and again to the women leaders in Kenya. You met, I think, a couple of them in our group who face much more difficult decisions than I'll ever face. And they inspired me.
Yeah. I still don't know if I unpacked my two trips from Kenya, like in my head yet. I mean, it's just the work that's being done. And like when you talked about Haiti and Uzbekistan, it like, the idea that cooperatives are solving such like the basic human needs issues first over there, it's like water, you know, I mean, it's just it's mind-boggling to think of how powerful this cooperative movement has been and can be. So it's, yeah, I can see why that you draw inspiration from that. As a leader, is there a common myth about being a good leader that you'd just like to debunk?
Well, about being a good leader or about being a leader, it is amazing to me how many people say, wow, it must be great to be a CEO. You're in charge. You know, to be in charge must be a wonderful thing. And I actually do remember from management school, studies that showed that CEOs and owners of their business are happier people. But I think that business of being in charge is a myth, right? Yeah, it's an illusion. You are never in charge. I don't even care if you own the business, right, Randy?
Yep.
Are you in charge?
No.
You're really never in charge in the way that folks think you are in charge. And I could spend another hour talking about what all that means, but I'll leave it there.
Has there been a life lesson or something that you just find yourself going back to over and over again, you know, over the course of your career?
Yeah. I mean, in my career, in life in general, I go back to the serenity prayer. I mean, it seems so basic, but know the things you can change, know the things you can't change, have the wisdom to know the difference. That's the big one. But I'll add one more thing, and have the courage to change the things that need to be changed.
Oh, that is beautiful. That just made me smile. When you think back to earlier in your career, is there a mistake that you made, or to put it a different way, is there a mistake that you see young leaders make often? Kind of the idea for this question was always that idea of like, we all have to touch the stove at some point, right? Like, I mean, it's just, is there something that you can think back on that you're like, boy, I wish I would have learned that sooner?
I don't really have a good answer for this one. Really don't. I mean, what I see is that people don't listen, that they think they know everything, but I'm not sure that's a really good answer for that.
That's actually probably the most popular answer on the show is listening. So before we move on just to the last part, I always like to find out a little bit more, and I don't know what free time looks like for you here since you seem to keep so busy, but if you do have, you know, some free time, there's nothing on the calendar, you're outside of credit unions, what does Joanne like to do to kind of recharge, disconnect? What does that work-life balance look like for you?
Well, as you know, I like to travel. I do a lot of community work that's even unrelated to the credit union. But I'll tell you, one of my weaknesses is like flea markets.
Okay.
So people have called me a junk hound. It's a very curated collection of junk that I have. It's beautiful stuff. I like a particularly original artwork. But what I really like about going to flea markets, church sales, bazaars, is the I hate to use this term, but the kind of art of the deal, right?
Oh, absolutely.
So the whole experience of the marketplace, right? What are people talking about? When you make an offer, how does the person react? What's the story behind that piece of junk that they have? And how do you come to a final price? And how do you make sure that both parties really feel good about it? And there's a lot of parallels there between what you find at the flea market and markets in internationally, and particularly in developing countries, and then what we experience day to day in our dealings, whether it's at the credit union or anywhere else. And so I probably read a lot more into that whole flea market experience than most people do. But yeah, it's kind of my go-to thing.
I like when I travel, I absolutely love to go to the markets in the city. I think it's one of the most, the tourist markets are fine, but like when you actually get into the markets where it's like everybody's doing their daily shopping and things like that,
yes.
I can spend hours just, you know, like walking around. If there's a little stall to eat some street food at, I am one happy camper. So
It is the way to study humanity. It absolutely is.
Yeah. And I was going to say, in the Northeast, we've been driving, since we can't fly anywhere, Jill and I have been driving around a lot the last few months, and there are a lot of places to find those treasures, I would assume, for you within a few hour drive of us here in Connecticut.
Yeah, there's a flea market, probably one of the best in Connecticut, right down about, I don't know, 7 miles from my house.
Okay.
So that's where you'll normally find me on a Sunday morning. Sadly, the pandemic hasn't allowed them to open, but we'll get back to that, I'm sure.
At some point we will. All right, on to the last part of the show, the rapid fire questions. The questions are rapid, but your answers do not have to be. What were you like in high school? You mentioned you're a numbers person and had the internship. And do you remember the first time you got into any memorable trouble?
Yeah, I was a good student. You know, I was that honor society girl state kind of achiever. But then I met my husband, and that was trouble. he's a very smart guy in a very different way. I mean, all of his smarts he's learned by building things, by working with his family and their family business, and the list just goes on and on of his smarts. But going to school was not a thing he wanted to do. So that was when I started skipping school.
Wow, that's awesome. So the husband was the trouble. Boys.
Oh, no. Yes.
Most of us, you've heard me ask this question, that we stumbled into careers in credit unions. Before you took the internship at the credit union, you said you were going to engineering school. Is that what you wanted to be when you grew up? Was it an engineer? Or what was the dream job when you were?
Yeah, it was. I mean, when I graduated school, high school, I was really strong in math and science. And so I got accepted into the School of Engineering. And I was pretty pleased because I was one of two women who had been accepted.
Okay. Yeah.
When I went to school, I quickly learned that there was a lot of institutional, I mean, to use a term today, bias.
Yeah.
That I never even recognized. But I remember going to dinner with one of my classmates who was a young man, and I was telling him how one of these projects that are really weed out projects in the engineering school was kicking my ass. And he said, that's no problem for me. He said, because I'm in a fraternity and there's just piles of those projects in the basement. We just go down and every male engineering student was in those fraternities. So at the time I was like, well, that's just the way it is. And, this was back in around 1980. So I moved on to, and by then I had taken, I made the dean's list in the School of Engineering. I made the dean's list. I was really, really pretty happy in spite of all that work that I had to do. And when I started working for this credit union to make money to help pay my tuition, I moved to business. I was going to become an accountant. And I did everything to become a CPA, but I could not leave the credit union. I mean, it was really hard for me to envision myself not doing the more community side, which I know in a CPA role you might be able to do, but not like you can do it in a credit union.
I think you found your place. That's for sure, my friend. Do you have any daily routines that if you just don't do, your day feels off?
Well, somehow connecting with my husband.
Okay.
When I travel a lot, and there are times when I can't talk to him every day, but I really like to. And yeah. I want to say every morning I say goodbye. So I know.
<That's safe. laughs>
But I also am kind of a bit of a news hound. I find if I don't listen to the news every day, I'm anxious to hear what's going on in the world. And, to think through how does that affect us all?
Yeah, absolutely.
Our friends in Kenya and us and in the whole world.
Absolutely. The random question, what's the best album of all time? That one you can listen to without skipping a song.
I knew you were going to ask this, and I cannot think of what the album is. I think I was born a little too late. I mean, I was thinking about my playlist, and it is like Aretha Franklin,
okay,
and Al Green and Ray Charles. And yet, last night, Amazon said, you might like this playlist. And it was Weird Al Yankovic.
To go together.
they truly know that I'm a numbers nerd.
Right. And that's like, you should play this. Motown to Weird Al. That's an interesting stretch for the Amazon algorithm, right? Like, so.
Yeah.
That's so great. As you know, I'm a reader. Jill and I have stacks of books all over the house. Has there been a book that you either gifted or that one that you just think everybody should read?
Well, for women in particular, I've gifted Lean In more times than any other book.
Okay.
But mostly, I read a lot of book reviews of professional books, but mostly I read literature, I guess you might say, or modern literature. I mean, the most recent book I've read that has really helped me understand Fulmore, and I am a constant student of that. And it's an old book. It's Carson McCullers, The Heart is a Lonely Hunter. I mean, she's just a brilliant, brilliant writer. It's back from, I think, 1942. Yeah. She was in her 20s. How does anybody write like that in their 20s? How does people understand humanity? I don't know.
I've not read that book. You're adding to the list. This is amazing. I love it. You're the stack of books we will have. So as you've grown older, what's become more important to you? And my favorite part of this question, what's become less important?
Well, I think a lot of your folks you've interviewed have said, you know, like, what I wear, what I own, what I have. I have always lived a really simple life. Yeah. And so I think as I get older, all that stuff does fall away and become much less important. And what's become more important, you know, are the people I surround myself with and the experiences that I have and what I can contribute. I got to tell you, one of the experiences that jazzes me the most is to go into an empty room and leave behind a library, right?
Oh,
of course,
gosh.
This is collaboration with a lot of other people,
yeah.
But what a feeling. You saw it.
Oh my gosh.
At Don Bosco. We did one in Kibera, which is one of the biggest slums in the world, really, but it's right outside of Nairobi. And that has to be 15 years ago, maybe a little bit less. In any case, Kibera School for Girls went into an empty room, left with the library there. The library is still used really extensively by the girls who are there, and they've all graduated on to become leaders in their communities. Anyway,
that is beautiful. And I'll tell you what, it was amazing to see. I mean, that's and the team that you were working with to see a blank room. And then by the time you guys went home, there was a full library. So it was beautiful. That's for sure. There's a question that I don't send. When you hear the word success, who's the first person that comes to mind?
Well, there's a lot of people that come to mind, but I'm going to talk about my mother a little bit.
Okay.
Because when I think back on her life. She was born in 1919, and her dad had died, you know, during the pandemic. So he died before she was born. And so here, my grandmother was left with, I think she had 12 kids, as a single mom with all these kids, you know. And so for my mom and my mother lived through the Depression, right? She married my dad in 42 and sent him off to war, World War II. She went to work building airplanes at Pratt & Whitney Aircraft, as the women did then. And then, of course, she brought up all of her kids. And my dad would be in that category, too. But, you know, and she led a really, really simple life. Tiny house, 5 kids. And I can remember she got to spend the last few years of her life retired in Florida, and she's sitting on the porch with me, and she said, "I can't believe how wonderful life is, and that, you know, that I'm able to enjoy this time in Florida." You know, she was living in this little modest house, but God bless her. That's success.
Oh, my goodness. That is beautiful. Yeah, that is success right there, is when you're at the end and you're like, I did all right. This is pretty good. thank you so much again, Joanne, for being on the show and sharing your story. The last question that I have for you is, do you have any final asks of our audience or final thoughts you'd like to share?
Well, I ask everybody to look around for the needs around them. And around you can be extended to developing countries around the world.
<That's>
and do what
true.
You can to address those needs. And, you know, for the credit union folks out there, you know, let's be the heart and soul of the financial services industry. You know, for us, that means being one part financial institution, one part social club, and one part community action organization. But you all have to figure out what that means for you. So I guess those would probably be my final words.
Well, thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much again, my friend. We'll link to everything we talked about in the show notes today. If people have additional questions of you, is there a best way to get a hold of you? LinkedIn, email, the Twitter machine? What's your poison?
Email is best. LinkedIn too, but email absolutely is best. Thank you, Randy.
We will link to that. Thank you again, Joanne, and stay healthy, my friend. Have a great day.
You too. Take care.
Before we go, I would like to extend a huge thank you to all of you for listening. We couldn't have this much fun and do what we do without you. And once again, a big thank you to Joanne for taking the time out of her busy schedule to share her experiences and her expertise with all of us. And thank you to our sponsors, PSCU. Our friends at PSCU have been longtime partners and supporters of ours. So please make sure to click on their link in the show notes and give them some love. See everything they have going on to help out the credit union community. One other thing, we're on all the podcast players out there, Apple, Spotify, Pandora, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, you name it, we're there. We would greatly appreciate if you would subscribe, maybe even leave us a 5-star review. Could even, one more step, add a review. You know, the ratings and the review on the old Apple podcast machine, it helps with the visibility of the show and us spreading credit union love. If you don't think we're worth 5 stars, just forget I asked. You can reach out to me directly and let me know where we can improve. And then the last thing, don't forget about the CU Insight Experience podcast book list. Need some stimulation for the mind while social distancing? We've got you covered. You can get your next book recommendation from the guests on our show. I know Joanne added one to my list. Thank you all again for listening. I hope you have an amazing day, and please stay healthy, friends.